All right, it's time for your wrestling nostalgia, and tonight we're taking a look at one of the most important rivalries and programs that Randy Orton has ever been involved in to this day, and established him as a main event player. So we're going to cover this from top to bottom with some audio from the WWE's Untold series that covered this exact program that was just released this past week. So we're going to get it all started, including your voicemails, right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this wrestling nostalgia version of the show. And this is a fun one. This is a really good one. One that, to be honest, I haven't really taken a hard look at until WWE released their Untold series, and I immediately got back into this program. It brought me back to 2004, 2005, 15 years ago now, which is just obscene to think about. That was a decade and a half ago. But it was so monumental in the growth and solidification of Randy Orton in his career that I don't think it's stated enough. I think it's an understated rivalry that he had with The Undertaker. And I'm glad WWE covered it. We're going to get to some audio from that, of course, in just a few minutes. But first, welcome to the show and welcome to the unofficial version of the WWE Podcast. For legal reasons, I have to say it's the unofficial WWE Podcast, but we are still under the title of the WWE Podcast. But we are not affiliated with WWE in any capacity whatsoever. I am just a wrestling fan talking to you wrestling fans. So that's what this is all about. And if you haven't joined us before, well, this is one of the, I think, most passionate wrestling podcasts out there. I would like to believe that we're very authentic, that we don't put on a show, that we just call it like it is. And yes, we complain a lot. And yes, we rant a lot, but it's out of love for the product. And when we love the product, you hear about that too. This is not a cuss and swear and just bury the product because it's a good or a fun thing to do and it's going to create clicks. That's not what we're about. We've got a great team of people that are on this program and that we brought on because they share that same passion. And I'm talking about Ashley Mann. I'm talking about Anthony DeMarco. I'm talking about Michael Gross. I'm talking about Mary Grader and other contributors that have kind of come and gone through this team. And I think we've got a really good, team of people because we are exactly what wrestling fans, I think, want to hear. And those people that have been longtime fans and that are big students of the game, so to speak, in a very overused phrase, I know. But anyway, okay, enough selling myself, right? You're here to talk about wrestling nostalgia, and we are going to get to that in just a minute. But we're also going to get to voicemails. But very first here at the top of the show, I want to put it out there. If anybody would like to cover AEW, the spot is still open. I know this is the WWE podcast, so it's kind of a weird thing I'm putting out there, but it is still an open slot because we did have an AEW team covering it. They have since moved on, and that's cool. So we're now in the hunt for someone or a pair of people to cover AEW. And if you're interested, email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And here's the requirements. You just send me an MP3 file once a week, and you have to have some kind of high-quality mic, which means no built-in mics on your laptop, no built-in mics on your tower, your PC, whatever, your all-in-one. Has to be high-quality, whether it's a blue mic or whatever. And you have to have a passion for wrestling, and you can't just be starting out watching AEW, okay? I don't want somebody who's just beginning to watch it and analyze it. I don't think that's going to be a good fit for our show. But that's really what we're looking for. Somebody with passion, somebody with a high-quality mic, and somebody that has a liking for AEW and has been following it for many months, okay, and has been really watching wrestling for a long time as well. So, and when I say high quality mic too, I don't mean like a $1,000 mic. Like there are good mics you can get for like $100. I mean, really. So, okay, enough of that. Let's get to the voicemails because I know that there were several of them I didn't get to last night. So we're going to do that and then get this show on the road. And the rest of the week, by the way, tomorrow's NXT review. And then your rivalries comes to you from Anthony DeMarco on Friday. And then we're back to your wrestling week in review on Sunday night. So, and by the way, good Lord, this is the calm before the storm because next week's election week. So if you care about such things, it could be just a zoo over the next week with the election, and maybe you don't have results the next day and mail-in ballots. So things could get pretty nuts. But we are your anti-politics show. We are your escape from all of that, whether you're on the red or blue side, doesn't matter, because we're all on the side of pro wrestling, and that's what this show delivers. So, okay, let's get to those voicemails and get the show underway.
Hi, it's Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. I want to talk about Sasha and Asuka for Survivor Series. I think that match is going to be great. Of course, the match is going to be fantastic, and doing the whole Raw versus SmackDown again for Survivor Series. Yes, it doesn't make any sense. Why did they do it? Who knows? But I like the pay-per-view itself. But yeah, but I also like the fact that they're just going to wait until Sasha defends the title, probably at TLC or something, so for her to retain and be the champion for a while. So, but, yeah, that's my, how you feel about that. Robert's got done again. I know people may not like it, but I do. So, bye.
Kyle from Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you so much for calling in. And let me just say, you may be the very first person I have ever heard, at least in the existence of this show, which has been around for the last 3 years, ever say that you enjoy the SmackDown versus Raw rivalry. And you acknowledge it doesn't make sense, but you enjoy it anyway. And hey, look, that's great. Like, I'm not going to try to diminish because you like something that I don't. I don't like it simply for the fact that it makes zero sense, which supersedes anything else that could happen. To me, if it doesn't make sense, I don't want to see it. And that's just me, because I think it takes the believability out of it. It takes the plausibility. It takes honestly any inner brand match being special at WrestleMania out of the equation. You know, it's also falsely advertised as the only night, the one night a year that Raw and SmackDown stars go head to head, which is a whole bunch of BS. I mean, it happens randomly throughout the year with no explanation. Happens at the Rumble. Happens at WrestleMania. And happens randomly at pay per views. I mean, go back and look at WWE's track record. They can't adhere to their own brand split. And this idea that people are just supposed to care about their brand that they're drafted to, not by choice, is also just ridiculous. But anyway, see, I'm already ranting. But look, if you enjoy it, that's awesome. That's awesome. And if you are looking forward to Sasha Banks and Asuka, I think that's great too. And you know what? I am too, from a wrestling perspective only. If I remove the part of my brain that gets super annoyed that this doesn't make sense, and it's just an exhibition match with no consequences whatsoever. I mean, let's be honest, there are no consequences no matter who wins what, because nothing is on the line. No championships are on the line here. This is 100% a bragging rights pay-per-view under the mask of a Survivor Series label. You guys remember the bragging rights pay-per-view? That's all this is. With the Survivor Series name, because nothing is on the line at all. Nothing. So, you are correct that Sasha Banks will hold that championship at least until TLC, because she doesn't have to defend it at Survivor Series because it's not on the line at Survivor Series. And that's good. Again, from a wrestling perspective on paper, this is going to be a really good match. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to as far as the quality of matches. I have to just take the part of believability out of it, which really hurts the whole point of pro wrestling, and just go for the completely athletic, superficial part of professional wrestling, which is just athleticism. Oh, cool moves. I hate doing that because that's against everything I stand for and what's important in wrestling. And people look so much today at just the great match, great athletics. I look at that secondary. That's a side effect of a great story. If it doesn't happen in a match, that doesn't mean necessarily it was a bad match. A match can draw money that's not an athletic, great match, so to speak, from athletic standpoint. It can be a great match because the story was so damn good. that will always supersede a great athletic match, in my estimation. So that's why I'm saying, when I look at this match, I'm excited for it from a purely superficial, unfortunately superficial, I have to go to that second level of what, quote, entertains me as a wrestling fan, and that's the athletic part of it. So that's where I'm at with Survivor Series. Ever since they've done this whole SmackDown versus Raw, just false rivalry and very forced, forced allegiance to the brand that you're on, I have been completely disassociated with it. So, but hey, great. Listen, Kyle, I'm not berating you if you like it. You like it, that's awesome, and more power to you. It's just not my cup of tea at all for the reasons I just mentioned. But okay, thanks, Kyle. Please call back in. I'll be interested to hear maybe your thoughts, predictions, and review. Quick review. Obviously, you only have like a 2 to 3 minute time frame when you people leave a voicemail. But I'd really be interested in hearing what you think. Okay. By the way, if you guys want to call in and you want to be a part of the voicemail portion of the show, it's 518-952-0247. So you can also email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Alrighty, let's get to the next voicemail.
Hey, it's the Waz again. Just watched Monday Night Raw. I don't know what the heck Miz and Morrison think they're doing. The whole thing with the Money in the Bank contract and all that crap. It's so stupid. I'm over it. I want it to go away. I want them to use it. I don't care how he uses it, wrong way, right way. I don't care. I just want to be gone. And in the show with Orton and McIntyre going at it. Okay, whatever. Really curious more what Fiend's got in mind. I'd actually like to see him try to mess with Randy, and maybe while he's trying to get in the mind of Randy, he actually gets scared and by what he finds in the mind of Randy. Here we go again. It's going to be Survivor Series, brand against brand, I guess, whatever. Hopefully they'll at least put some guys, so far they have, that haven't had like major rivalries in the past. So those guys can maybe work together a little bit. The women's Raw Survivor Series team is a flipping joke. Putting Lana in there, what's this thing about Lana keep going through the announcer's table? I don't understand. And to mention that, we keep calling, or they keep calling, I should say, Lacey Evans, the classy and traditional Southern Belle, but she dresses like, well, kind of like a prostitute. Just saying, just putting it out there. Maybe I'm wrong. You can tell me. Anyways, Monday Night Raw, it was all right. Kofi and, well, the New Day, Xavier Woods acting like the Street Profits. That actually was kind of funny. The actually segment with, what's her name coming in? That actually was kind of funny. I kind of enjoyed that. I was hoping to see more Hurt Business. Maybe that was on the full show, but not on Hulu. Anyways, thanks again. Later.
Hey, Waz, really good to hear from you. I had to laugh. I was laughing during your analysis or your comparison of what Lacey Evans calls herself to what she actually dresses like. I'm pretty sure that a classy Southern Belle, if someone actually, you go down south, like you go south of the Mason-Dixon line, and you ask, you know, you ask some, a girl that is, that kind of classifies herself as classy, that she's not wearing what Lacey Evans wears. I understand she's in wrestling attire, and she's, but you can rest, you know, over the wrestling attire a little bit more classy to what you're actually telling us you are. And Lacey Evans does exactly the opposite, where she does kind of dress a little bit provocative, with the little short skirts and the tight, you know, push-up bra and all that kind of stuff. You're exactly right that she is extremely, extremely contradictive of what she says she is, and I don't think that's actually by design. I don't believe that she and or creative look at that as a contradiction of what she calls herself, you know, like where you would look at her as a hypocrite, so she's unlikable, because as a babyface, she still called herself that and dressed exactly the same. So if that was supposed to be by design for creating heel heat by saying one thing when you're actually dressing another way, that's not by design, because as a babyface, she didn't change it at all. And that's really funny. Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a good observation. I never really thought about that. And so good stuff. The point you made about the Money in the Bank briefcase and the Miz and Morrison. Yeah, I'm 1,000% behind you about getting rid of this Money in the Bank briefcase and really Miz and Morrison. If Miz and Morrison just went away, just all of a sudden they just stopped existing on the program. They just, no one explained it. They just didn't show up next week or ever again. I wouldn't care. I wouldn't be like, oh man, I wish somebody wanted, I wish we got to see someone really whoop their ass. Here's the thing too. WWE does position them as heels, as they properly do. It's not even about casting them incorrectly. I don't think they should be babyfaces. That's not the problem. They're casting them as heels, but they always get their ass whooped. So you can't even build heel heat. Like Baron Corbin. They're kind of on the Baron Corbin Express, where Baron Corbin generates a little bit of heat, and they can't even go, like, you know, 1 week without having him lay flat on his back and get the fans really amped up and angry about and waiting to see somebody finally stand up to him. You know, does WWE know how to create genuine heel heat anymore? They just can't help themselves and want to make sure they put a smile on people's faces, because that's what Stephanie McMahon does. And instead of really building heel heat, which they did a good job of Randy Orton until they just decided to squash it and pour cold water on it with Keith Lee getting a victory and then back-to-back wins by Drew McIntyre, then outside of those examples, or that Randy Orton example, they have not generated true heel heat from anybody in a long time. But circling back to the Money in the Bank briefcase itself, they have actually turned me on the Money in the Bank briefcase. As a whole, as a concept. It's been so damaged to me since the pay-per-view, which was the worst pay-per-view. Well, again, let me clarify. The pay-per-view as a whole, I think, was good. The complete dumpster fire was the Money in the Bank ladder match itself for both the men and women. It was, if you want to see embarrassing pro wrestling, you want to see a match or two matches, the men and women's Money in the Bank ladder matches back in May. You want to see those, some matches that will embarrass you to be a wrestling fan, or are the matches that the friends that you have don't like wrestling and what they think wrestling is and why it's so stupid. You watch those matches, it will confirm exactly that. It will confirm exactly that. Produced, not funny, not taken seriously, and devalues the championships as a whole, because the people in those matches were produced to not take it seriously, and there were so many side antics and stupid crap going on that it really devalued the Money in the Bank briefcase itself, and thereby devaluing the championships themselves, because that's what the Money in the Bank briefcase is all about. Because 80% or higher, I think it's a little over 80% of the cash-ins, do cash in successfully for the championship. So, I mean, I could rant on that match for many, many hours, but I won't. As a whole, though, I think Otis carrying it, and what they've done with Otis, and what The Miz has done with being just a stale piece of gum over the last how many months now, and Morrison just kind of being that unwatchably annoying heel, that's not good heel heat. You know what? I've oftentimes argued, well, heel heat, you're angry, that's good. But here's the thing, I'm not angry, so you didn't do your job, okay? I'm not angry at Morrison and The Miz. I'm just over it. I'm changing the channel type of feeling. That's how I feel. So I don't want to hear the excuse from creative, who, if I was talking to them, they would probably, or Vince would even say, but don't you want to see them get their ass kicked? No, I don't, because number one, that happens on a weekly basis, because you can't have enough creative power or creative balls to say, hey, let's build some real heel heat. They're not going to, you know, nobody's going to get the best of them for months. No, they just can't help themselves, and they make sure that everyone's left with a smile on their face, because that supersedes anything that they have going on with heels. So I feel every time I see The Miz and Morrison, it sucks the life out of me. It's like hearing Stephanie McMahon's music. They are like the walking embodiment of Stephanie McMahon's music. And they're, look, they're not bad in the ring. John Morrison, I think, was not slotted in the right position to just come back the exact spot that he left WWE. And The Miz is just you talk about a corporate performer. You talk about a corporately created wrestler. And yeah, he probably had some input on it, but he is like the just factory made wrestler. He cuts a good promo. He's good in the ring, like average to good. He is marketable. He's a good looking dude. He can obviously talk, right? That's what The Miz is. He's just the factory made assembly line wrestler. And I am just over how they're produced. I'm over their characters, and the Money in the Bank briefcase and the championships thereby have been devalued by it. I don't want Money in the Bank anymore because of what happens this year. And it's a shame because I used to look forward to who's carrying it when they cash it in, right? And you'd speculate every pay-per-view. Oh, well, you know, it's Roman Reigns versus, say, Braun Strowman in the main event, but, you know, damn, you know, so-and-so could cash in. You know, you don't know. This year it's kind of like, oh, I hope Otis doesn't cash in, please, right? That's how you felt. That's how most of us have felt. And now The Miz has it, and you're like, oh, God, no. It's not The Miz is such an a-hole. I want to see somebody tear him apart. That's not how I feel, and that's not how I should feel based on how they've produced him. So, bad job out of creative for this one. Real bad job. And it's an admission of their mistake to give Otis the championship because they had no intention of giving it to The Miz until there was fan backlash from social media. And they are lucky that they were not in an arena with real fans over the last 3 to 4 months to hear the boos rain down on Otis. I guarantee it would have happened. Guaranteed. Okay, now you got me fired up. But anyway, Waz, thank you for calling in. Feel free to call back anytime. Okay, we have a final voicemail here, and then we're going to get right to your nostalgia.
Hey, Matt, it's Kyle from New York again. Whenever you're hearing this voice message, you might have seen Raw already for this week, the Raw for Hell in a Cell. And in the main event, The Fiend basically came out during a moment of bliss with Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. And this makes me think that this is going to be one of two things. The Fiend is going to fight Randy Orton for the WWE Championship, or it's going to be The Fiend, Randy Orton, and Drew McIntyre in a WWE Championship Triple Threat match. Now, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on either of those two matches happening, because personally, I don't like it. Because if they want Randy Orton to still be WWE Champion, The Fiend's going to have another loss. But if they want The Fiend to be WWE Champion, he's going to win it, and it's going to make Randy Orton look super weak, because it's going to be his first defense, and he's going to lose. So it's either going to make Randy Orton look weak, or The Fiend look weak. Like, a few months ago, I would want to see The Fiend versus Randy Orton, maybe, like, without the title on the line, like, you know, The Fiend fought everyone Bray Wyatt has fought in the past. And Randy Orton's definitely one of the people that's got a ton of history of Bray Wyatt. But, like, for the title, I wouldn't want to see. I'd want to see The Fiend versus Randy Orton in a title match. Like, you've got Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, I mean, it's all the people Bray Wyatt's fought in the past. Randy Orton's the only one left that he really hasn't fought yet that he's had history with in the past. So I would want to see it, but not for the title. So I wonder what your thoughts are about this, because like I said, like, near these two men should get a loss right now. Anyway, that's it. Thanks.
Hey, Kyle. Thank you for calling in. You're in New York, so I wonder if you're nearby, because I am also as well. But with Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre continuing their program, and now The Fiend being involved kind of on the side, I think it's inevitable that we do have a triple threat. You can't go Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre again. It doesn't make sense for a fourth time. You know, WWE, I think after three, is running the patience thin of fans. I mean, three is a typical number of matches that you have in a program, on average. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's a lot more. But three, I think, is average. And adding The Fiend certainly adds an element of, you know, freshness to this program rather than just straight Randy versus Drew, Randy versus Drew. Here's what my early prediction and early call is. Again, this is very early. Obviously, Survivor Series is out, right? Survivor Series is out simply for the fact that no championships are on the line, just, you know, ridiculous made-up bragging rights. And with that said, since no championships are on the line, The Fiend will probably interfere in the match with Randy Orton, costing him the match and having Roman Reigns beat Randy Orton, right? Because I think Randy Orton or Roman Reigns needs the victory and the momentum to keep going more than Randy Orton does at this point. So there's that. But also, what's going to lead to the triple threat, I think, is going to happen at TLC, the next pay-per-view. That's when I think this match takes place. I think Edge is still a couple of months away, from what I understand. I thought he was closer, but it doesn't seem like he is. And it does still seem, from everything I'm gathering from credible news sites that we all look at, right? I don't need to give free advertising, but we know the big wrestling news sites. It seems as if the plan is still Randy Orton versus Edge at WrestleMania, possibly in an I Quit match for the WWE Championship. I've stated many times on here, I don't think it needs the championship. Just as you don't think that this program needs a championship either, and you're very well right. And I don't think the Fiend needs a championship. I still don't. I know that he's had very short runs with the Universal title. Goldberg gave him his first loss, of which still is a terrible decision. And the Seth Rollins deal with last year's Hell in a Cell still kind of comes up every once in a while in my thoughts, but here is also my early prediction for the TLC. I'm getting four steps ahead of myself, but since we're going to play this out, again, Randy Orton loses to Roman Reigns at Survivor Series due to The Fiend. That's my early call. And then, four steps ahead to the TLC pay-per-view, I think what happens is you finally get that triple threat with these three, and Drew is there to take the fall, protecting The Fiend. Drew has already taken a loss to Randy. The Fiend takes out Drew. And then you get a program with Drew and The Fiend after this, because Randy will still be champion. Maybe The Fiend, again, takes out Drew, maybe gives him a mandible claw, and that, he does the dirty work, and Randy Orton slithers in and covers him for the victory, and Randy Orton retains. Then you get a singles program with Drew and The Fiend, so he's kind of off away from the championship, both of them are, and Randy gets a returning Edge at the Royal Rumble. That is, I think, how this plays out, and they'll lead those two up to a WrestleMania match for the main event for the championship. So there is your booking for the next few months. I actually am fairly confident in that, but hell, I mean, I don't think WWE has even thought that far. I mean, I don't, but hey, you're welcome, creative. You're welcome. So, Kyle, thank you so much for calling in. Please feel free. And anyone else feeling, kind of the itch to vent, this is your channel to do it. Please keep it PG. If you cuss or swear, I'm going to have to bleep you out. And I really don't want to go through the audio editing of doing that. So save us both time and don't put in any cuss words. The mild swearing, we all know what mild words are. Okay, no S words, no F words. You can say, crap and damn and hell. That's fine. Keep it to what WWE would say on their programming. Okay, how about that? That's a rule of thumb. We're they're TV PG, we're PG here. So, all right, let's get to the nostalgia here. Randy Orton, Undertaker, 2004 to 2005. Again, my inspiration was sparked by requests from listeners, but also because of the WWE Network's Untold series. And I'm going to give you guys just the intro to the Untold series, just the first minute or so of Randy Orton talking, just to kind of set the stage for what we're about to get into. So let's play that and we'll keep things going.
In my long, almost year-long program with The Undertaker, I learned what a receipt was the hard way. So now he's 6'10". So him on a knee, he's still very tall, but he's considerably shorter than he normally is. Now, there's a trajectory when you swing a chair, right? Keep that in mind. So he's on his knees. So I back up, and I start to swing. I was off by about this much. And when that chair came down, instead of hitting him here, I caught him with the lip of the chair right about here. And I ripped the skin off of his forehead all the way down to the bridge of his nose, and he was covered in blood. That wasn't supposed to happen.
Still moving around.
Oh, it's not done!
Steel chair literally bent around the skull of The Undertaker.
Look at the chair.
Undertaker.
The old school wrestling mentality is you get cracked in the chin, and you're like, okay, well, he ain't getting over on me, so I'm going to crack him back. This is not ballet. If you're going to be brutal, you got to be brutal.
So I'm pants. We get back. I see him. I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry. He just looks at me. Don't worry, kid. Your receipt's coming. So I'm like, oh, that sucks.
All right. So then that's where things start here. And that was the intro to the whole thing. Again, this was a really well done. I got to give WWE their production team their props, man. When they want to put a documentary series together, they do a hell of a job, especially as of late. And this whole thing, it's about 45 minutes long. So worth every minute. If you haven't seen this, it's worth your time, because you don't see a whole lot of Randy Orton interviews, number one, out of character. Undertaker obviously has opened up a lot more, but this program itself has never really been looked at and analyzed. So that's what we're doing here. Now, again, the Undertaker, man, that chair shot, if you haven't seen it, it really brings you back to the days of chair shots to the skull. And you know what? I miss it. I miss chair shots to the skull. I will be brutally honest and I will say it. And yes, I know that why they're banned now, and I understand and I agree why they're banned. But sometimes as a wrestling fan, you crave that chair shot to the face, to the head. You just do. And anybody out there that's denying this, let's stop denying it. Stop pretending that you wouldn't want to see this every once in a while, because the chair shots to the back, when you could easily hit someone in the head and be a lot more effective, it gets redundant. It's constantly a chair shot to the gut, a chair shot to the back, a chair shot to the gut, a chair shot to the back. It's not as effective or visually pleasing. And yeah, my lust for blood once in a while, so what? Why the hell do you think the UFC is so damn successful, right? People want to see each other beat the holy hell out of one another. So, and you know, once in a while, I think it's warranted. And so anyway, I understand concussions and safety, and I absolutely understand that. But you cannot deny there's a part of you that misses chair shots to the head. So let's just be honest with one another here. So this program, again, started, and it was one that I was, you know, at the time, Randy Orton was just there for a couple of years. And Undertaker actually was the one to request to work with Randy Orton. It wasn't the other way around. So let's take a listen to that.
It was creative. It might have been Bruce Pritchard even. But they came to me and they said, listen, kid, Undertaker wants to work with you. And I just... With me?
Undertaker, you're 12-0 at WrestleMania. You're undefeated at WrestleMania.
The Undertaker's streak, his winning streak at WrestleMania, it wasn't a thing yet. He was 12-0. And I went into WrestleMania as the Legend Killer, telling everybody I was going to be The Undertaker's very first loss.
But look into my eyes when I say this. Soon, very soon, you will be 12-1.
Not a lot of people have the nerve to slap The Undertaker. It had to be a great slap. If he'd have pulled it, or if he'd have made it look wimpy, it would have flopped.
All right, so that's how the whole thing with WrestleMania came about, was Undertaker, who wanted to work with Orton. And, you know, that speaks to Undertaker not only knowing that Orton could probably put on a good match for him, but also trying to build the next generation of stars, even back in 2004, 2005. It speaks to the Undertaker and his willingness and wanting to build those next generation of stars. So it certainly was a great move by Undertaker, not only for himself, but more importantly for Randy Orton. So, you know, again, we got a program here going that I was immediately into. You knew that Randy Orton was the up-and-coming star. He'd only been there for a couple of years. Undertaker was the established veteran. You knew what he was capable of. Also, Taker had just gone back to the dark side. You know, he was the American Badass just a year before that, which he returned at WrestleMania in WrestleMania in March of 2004 as the Dead Man. And now you're looking at late 2004. So he's freshly back to the dead man gimmick from the American Badass. And when we get into this match at WrestleMania, whew, boy, I remember this match well, because this cemented Orton even more than any match I think that they had prior or since that cemented Orton. Because yes, Undertaker was 12-0. Undertaker was 12-0, and he had a streak going, but as Randy said, it wasn't really known as the streak yet. He was just undefeated. And it was a moment that I'll never forget, and we're going to take a listen to it, of Orton almost breaking that streak. To me, that was, up until that point at 12-0, I thought, oh my God, this could actually be the moment that his streak is broken at WrestleMania. So let's take a listen.
I've got this move, the RKO. He wants to fit it in there somewhere. Not exactly sure where. It's not an established move. He goes to choke slam me. Now, this is one of those moves not everybody kicks out of. It's why my finishing move matters. It's why people chant RKO. Whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy, and one of the forefathers of helping me get that move over was The Undertaker.
He understood what our business is. What it is storytelling. And Randy is one of those guys that does the small things.
He's going for the tombstone! That's The Undertaker's finishing move!
That means so much that people don't realize what they're seeing, but it ties everything in so well together. It's like water off a duck's back with Randy. He stepped up and delivered.
All right, so we got a little bit of that the match here. You heard some of the audio, but that RKO moment, that's the moment I was talking about with this program, or this particular match at WrestleMania. My God, that was a moment that I said, oh my God, this could be it. I actually remember jumping out of my seat, because up to that point, I mean, there's been some scares of Undertaker, you know, not having his undefeated streak going, or at that point, again, it wasn't known as the streak. It wasn't a thing, as Randy said, but man, it was definitely, up to that point, the moment, the closest anyone had come to defeating The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And if you were watching wrestling back then, you could hear the crowd popping, and I'm sure many of you at home that are listening that watched that match were probably doing the same thing, like, oh my God, this is it, oh my God. It was such a flawlessly done RKO. It was perfectly countered from a chokeslam into an RKO. Perfectly done. It was great. Really good. So these two ended up having a Survivor Series casket match where Randy Orton ended up beating The Undertaker and lighting the casket on fire. And he almost lit himself on fire, as he goes on to talk about. And then Undertaker returns. And I'm sorry, they had a casket match at SummerSlam. Undertaker returned at Survivor Series after Randy Orton had beaten everyone and was the sole survivor for his team. And that's where they enter Hell in a Cell, which happened at Armageddon, the very next pay-per-view. Now, notice here, it wasn't called the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. It was called Armageddon, where a Hell in a Cell match had taken place because it was deserving. So that's the difference of what I talk about here, of when the cell should be used. Sparingly and appropriately, not just because it's a part of the schedule. It waters down what it means. And by God, can we get rid of the red cage? Can we just get back to, you know, normal steel mesh? Please. Please. I'm begging you. It looks even more gimmick than it already is. So, but nonetheless, they end up at the cell here, which is the blow-off of their rivalry. Perfect place for it. Most matches, to me, if I was designing it, would be the blow-off in the cell when it's a heated rivalry that's been going on for a long time. So let's listen to some of the commentary from Orton here and Taker.
When you got two guys beating the shit out of each other, chances are somebody's going to be bleeding. Talk about an adrenaline rush. Talk about living in the moment. Talk about feeling invincible, feeling the roar of the crowd, feeling that warm blood drip down your face. There's nothing quite like it. I might sound like a lunatic right now saying all this, but
any of the boys in the back, you know what I'm talking about.
It is what it is. It's not comfortable, and it's very visual, and it's easy to understand.
Measuring the Undertaker!
When it comes to using inanimate objects, if you're going to use them, you got to use them. You can't pitter-patter around. If you're going to hit somebody, you got to hit them. That's business. That's the business that we chose.
He's down the skull of the Undertaker. Wow. And suddenly the Phenom is on his heels.
And that's kind of one of the things that I've always felt and I've always brought to the table.
All right, so we'll kind of pause it there. But Undertaker goes on to win after a kind of a botched tombstone by Orton. I didn't notice it was a little bit botched, but he actually did tombstone Taker. And Taker, I think, out of protection for himself, put his hands down as he was dropped just to make sure that, hey, he hasn't really done this before, especially in front of a live audience when he's exhausted. Let's kind of cover ourselves. So I guess I won't call it a botch. It was more of just Undertaker protecting himself. Totally understandable. And Undertaker goes on to tombstone and beat Orton. And it was the right move. The right move. Undertaker was still in his prime at that point, although kind of on the tail end, but still the big guy. I don't want to say the big dog because now it means something different. But he was truly the guy that ran the place. And he was that guy and was still an amazing wrestler at that time. Orton was an up-and-coming one, although now he had been firmly established and a made man by The Undertaker. Undertaker, I don't think, gets enough credit for really helping Randy Orton, the character, and his moveset be established as a main event guy for years and decades now to come. Orton is now a 40-year-old guy and still performing at the level that he is. And I think that's an attribute to Randy Orton. And, you know, for a guy that we all complained was kind of coasting and doing 55 miles an hour in the fast lane, he has protected his body and picks his spots. Randy Orton's a guy that picks his spots and he doesn't have any wasted movement. That was another point brought up in the documentary here, the quick documentary, that Orton, if you notice, he moves methodically. And yes, that fits with his character, but it's also strategically brilliant because it saves his body for what he wants to do, and that's have a long career, not a flash in the pan, you know, just throw your body at the ground 7 days a week as hard as you can type of guy. He's very, very measured and calculated in every move and movement that he does. If you notice Randy Orton, he moves slower than most guys. He walks slower. He talks a little bit slower. His facial expressions, everything with Orton is intentional. I don't know how else to say it. So maybe you'll notice that the next time you see him. He's very intentional. He chooses his moves, his words, his body language very, very intentionally and very specifically. And that is an attribute, I think, something really good that Orton does. Not to the level of Keith Lee, where he, you know, speaks at, you know, half the talking speed of a normal person. And not to just be different, but Orton just is the guy that is so seamless in everything that he does. And, you know, obviously he's saved his body and he's done a great job keeping himself in shape. And I know he has his own tour bus, I guess, that brings him around, and good for him. I would too. If I could afford it, why not? You know, like save yourself, get some sleep, do what you need to do and recover and re-energize. And, Orton has done a great job. That's why he's lasted so long. Orton has lasted really a long time now. And in his 40s, you know, he can't take the bumps that he normally would even in his 20s or 30s. So and when you look at him too, it's like he hasn't aged. He's stuck in a time capsule or something. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this. And again, this, if you want to see the full documentary, check out the WWE Network on the Untold series. I gave you guys a quick, you know, a few quick clips, but it's worth the entire watch for sure if you want to check it out, because it is one that's great. And it's always great to hear from Taker now that he's kind of opened up and realized that he's done with his career for the most part. But that remains to be seen at Survivor Series. We'll see if my prediction holds true over the last year and a half now, I feel like. Nonetheless, guys, this has been a fun nostalgia, and of course, your voicemails are also fun to respond to, because you never know what you guys are going to say or bring up. But nonetheless, thank you everybody for listening and for making this show a success. We're going to continue to build here because of you guys. And please call us or send us a voicemail and email us if you have suggestions for the next Wrestling Nostalgia. Also, if you're interested in the AEW position, please email me at realwwpodcast@gmail.com. Alrighty, well, tomorrow again is your NXT review. Friday is Rivalries with Anthony DeMarco. And then Sunday night is your Week in Review. So, Saturday. I don't want to forget Saturday. Michael Ritter is going to be covering SmackDown for us. So, our newest team member. Didn't want to forget you, Michael. So, he has been doing a really good job. He will be covering SmackDown on Saturday. So, really, the next few nights, you'll be getting a show from us. I mean, we just constantly pump out the content for you guys, and I hope you're enjoying it. All right, everybody, enjoy your day or evening, and I'll be talking to you soon.